Well, here we are at the Zen Center, it seems. And since it's a Zen Center, it seems only natural and fitting that our central practice is Zazen, Zen meditation, sitting Zen. Many other practices around Zazen, supporting Zazen, and as expressions of Zazen. But since we offer a lot of Zazen, and some of us might sit a lot of Zazen or a little Zazen, it seems good to endlessly clarify, what is this Zazen? What is this sitting? I think I once heard someone, I think it was someone from Monterey Bay Zen Center, where our late abbot Catherine Thanis was the founder. And I think they said near the end of her life, she asked the speakers who taught down there from the Zen Center, she kind of almost like requested, tell me if anybody's heard this story, that they speak about Zazen. Any of Catherine's students heard that before? Maybe near the end. People were maybe, you heard that? Did you hear that, Patrick or Jean?
No.
Yeah, Edie heard it. Yeah. So I don't know if it was true here or maybe more at Monterey, but that there's many, many things to talk about in the world of Buddha Dharma, right? And it's good to talk about all of them. But for some reason, maybe she felt like there aren't enough talks about Zazen and what it is. Maybe she felt. I didn't hear it from Catherine herself, but I thought that was interesting, I thought. And I appreciated hearing that. That in some ways, it's like you can't really say anything about Zazen. And in another way, it's like a lot could be said. And Zazen, sitting meditation, has so many benefits, from simple good health and relaxation and concentration and focus, all the way up to liberation from suffering and opening the heart of great compassion for all beings. So a wide range of effects of Zazen. I haven't heard too many negative side effects, but there might be for some people at some certain times. So I thought, I've been thinking a lot and practicing actually, myself, three kinds of sitting meditation, three different types. And it almost seems to me like they're the only three types, or, you know, they're inclusive of a lot of subgroups of meditation. So as we talk about them, you can see if you can think of others outside of these, or maybe some combination. And as I say, I often, in one period of Zazen, I'll sometimes progress through or kind of shift between these three types of Zazen. So I just thought I'd mention how I've been thinking about it. And it's also a little kind of study of Buddhist meditation. I think this includes like all the Buddhist meditations I could think of. And since we're talking about Zazen, which is something that we do or don't do, I thought maybe even though it's a Dharma talk, we could kind of do it like a kind of guided meditation. We can try out these three different types and compare them. Some people can't stand these guided meditations. Zen, traditional Zen doesn't really use them too much. And we hardly ever do it here like this. So, but I thought maybe we could, little short snippets. So first of all, and this is also kind of like the elaborate form of Zazen instruction for people who are newer to meditation and maybe something new for people who've been sitting. So we can look at these three aspects of body, breath, and mind. So we start by settling the body in an upright posture, and I often feel that below the waist is not that important. Below the waist on the body, like the legs basically, is like whatever is a really comfortable foundation for the upper body. So I think sitting cross-legged, sitting kneeling, sitting in a chair are maybe not so different, actually. We want to find a comfortable position, so it's like, well, it looks like you're supposed to sit cross-legged, but that's like excruciating for me. I would say then, don't do it. Find a comfortable but stable foundation. And then the upper body is upright and balanced, upright yet totally relaxed and at ease with the head balanced on top and the hands traditionally rest lightly on the heel of the foot if the foot is up here on the thigh. If it's not, then you can experiment. Sometimes then it maybe gets uncomfortable to hold the hands up in the air, like the shoulders actually get tired. So then maybe lowering them is a little good, or a little cushion for the hands to support them, or on the knees, also okay. And the eyes, you usually leave open just a little bit, cast downward and unfocused on any particular visual form. And then the breath is a natural, relaxed breath. And a breath, one of the breath parts that I like to bring in is breathing in really deeply down to the base of the spine, using the mind's attention to let the breath fill down below the navel all the way down to the base of the spine, filling and also relaxing that whole area. We often hold tension in this lower abdomen area, so by breathing into it, imagining the breath energy filling that lower abdomen, it naturally relaxes. Almost like we can, like a sponge or something, we can feel like it's just expanding, and just like, it's a wonderful feeling, is it not, to let the breath fill that area in a relaxed way. And then breathing out, all the way out. And breathe in all the way down to the bottom like that, and breathe out like up the back to the top of the head. So filling the body and circulating through the body, this breath energy. It's so relaxing and comfortable to breathe in this way, I think. So that's the body and the breath. And then the mind is where the story starts getting more complex. So there's more options here. Body and breath may be the same for everybody. So this is where I'm proposing three types of meditation with the mind, three types of orientation of the mind in Zazen. The the first is looking through the Buddhist tradition. I think this first type is the type most commonly taught in the world of Buddha's Dharma, like all those early Buddhist sutras and teachings of the Buddha, classic Buddhist meditation. I would say, like, up to the point of Zen, And we'll get into that later. I think Zen starts playing with this idea of what meditation is. But the early meditation, and all schools of Buddhism hold and honor this, is mindfulness of an object, a mental object. Not necessarily, well, actually I would say, actually, I think always a mental object. Because if we're using senses, we're actually, it's a kind of a, it's a sensation that we're meditating on. So the maybe most common people will use is the physical body itself, or the breath, which is part of the physical body. But when we look closely, what is the body and the breath? Especially if we're now sitting and breathing, maybe even helps to close our eyes to tune in to this question of what is the body and breath, because if we're looking down at the body, we associate it with this visual image of the body. So with our eyes closed, it's seems to me it's a tactile sensation. Experientially, that's what the body is. And it's actually not even like a whole body the way we would look at it in the mirror or like a picture of ourselves. Our experience, especially with our eyes closed, is quite different than the picture of ourselves, right? We can maybe trace the parts of the picture, like we can start to feel the tactile sensations down one arm to the hand, down one leg to the foot, through the middle of the body. But if we really staying with the direct experience as closely as possible without any preconceived ideas, it may be hard to even trace these arms and legs the way they usually appear to us and the way we think of them. It's more like a mass of tactile sensation, is it not? And there's parts in this kind of feel of tactile sensation that we could label the body. There's parts that have some tension in them and parts that are more relaxed. And also if we look for the edges of this body, like even where it contacts the cushion, again, we can have a visual image of like our leg or bottom touching the cushion. But experientially, with our eyes closed, it's hard to find that boundary between the tactile sensation of the leg, and we just feel the sensation of, we might call it contact. But if we didn't know, if we suddenly woke up from sleep in a pitch black room, we might not know even what we're sitting on. And if we couldn't move at all to kind of adjust and check it out a little bit, if we're totally still and just woke up into this tactile sensation in the pitch black, we might not even be able to tell like if it's hard or soft or whatever. So it's interesting to explore what we call the body as just tactile sensation. I think in our direct experience, that's what it is. And then we open our eyes, then we kind of associate the tactile sensation with the visual image of the body and make them into this unified package. But for meditating on the body as object, which the Buddha offered as a meditation, I would understand that to be directing the mind or awareness toward a tactile sensation. And the nice thing about that is that the bodily sensation is, it's like, it's not thinking. It's not complicated. It's not discursive. It's not conceptual. I think that's why It's a great meditation object that the Buddha offered, because usually our awareness is directed towards all these conceptual ideas, and it gets very confusing and it pulls us out of the present moment. So this direct tactile sensation is always in the present moment, and it's not complicated. So the mind starts to come to rest in the present more and more if we focus the attention on that. And of course, the attention falls off that and we bring it back. And then this aspect of tactile sensation we call the breath is another object. It's really the breath also seems to be just a tactile sensation, does it not? The breath in our direct experience. It's the sensation of some muscle tension in the abdomen area, contracting and relaxing. But even to label muscles, this is our ideas that we've heard and seen and studied. But in a direct experience of breathing, it's nothing to do with muscles, actually. It's just sensation. And we can even explore what is contraction and relaxation as a tactile sensation. If we zoom in on really trying to even say what that is, it can't even really be said, it seems like. So this is called mindfulness of body. We put body in quotes, maybe really mindfulness of tactile sensation. And breath is a particular kind of tactile sensation that's a kind of contracting and relaxing in the center of the body that we might also notice is somehow associated with like air moving in and out of the nose. But even though the association between those two in direct experience is very mysterious, we start thinking about it, oh, it's because there's a windpipe that connects them. But in our experience, very strange how the sensation of the wind at the nostrils is somehow related to this expansion and relaxation in the abdomen. It's more like they're more like synchronized in time, but apart from that, it's hard to find the relationship between them. So the Buddha taught mindfulness of body, including the breath, mindfulness of feeling, which is now not just the tactile sensation, but the quality of it being either pleasant or unpleasant. So it's putting a little bit of a value, it's looking at that value that we naturally place on it before any thinking, which is an unusual practice, because usually there's a lot of thought associated with pleasant and unpleasant, but mindfulness of feeling is just noticing there's this sensation. Before when I was meditating on so-called body, it was just a tactile sensation, and now I'm looking at, is this tactile sensation pleasant or unpleasant? And before, looking into why it might be pleasant or unpleasant, it seems to fall into either one of those or so-called neutral. A neutral sensation means neither pleasant nor unpleasant. And then this mindfulness of these simple objects is letting go of all kind of assessment and judgment about them, good or bad, stories and conceptual ideas we have about them. Just the direct experience. And then the Buddha also talked about mindfulness of these mental qualities, which are also objects of awareness. Like there's like a desire to move, and like we're just aware of that desire to move, but not adding anything extra, like, well, should I act on it or not? We're just aware. Or aversion. all kinds of mental factors, not so much thoughts actually, but more just like shades of color of the mind. Maybe some pride that I feel so present now, or some disappointment that I don't. And just like the different shades of mental experience. And they also seem related to and connected often with the tactile sensations. Sadness might feel like a tactile sensation in a particular part of this field of tactility. And all of these simple experiential objects of awareness are that. There's an awareness, which we haven't really looked at what that is yet, but the awareness is like that which is attending to the object of experience, which seems like most people have a pretty easy sense of what that means, to direct your mind towards an object. It's kind of a mysterious thing that we are able to do, but we kind of know what that means. Directing attention towards the breath, the body, the feeling. And the result of this kind of meditation is we become more and more present and relaxed. Like the less the mind is wandering off the direct experience of the present, the more relaxed, at ease, refreshed, and alert we become. Of course, there's all kinds of other factors that come in and mess with our meditation, but in general, it seems to work that way. We might feel like, wait, I just can't stay present. My mind keeps wandering to these other past and present thoughts. Mostly thoughts is where most minds wander, conceptual thought. So where it's like a training. We just keep bringing the mind back to the present. And it's also, we might say, letting go of conceptual thought is another way of returning to the present. One is kind of a positive thing, of we're directing the attention towards the breath. The other is a kind of, the flip side of it is we're letting go of the attention that's going towards the story about tomorrow or yesterday. And we both have the same effect. We can direct the attention towards the object, or we can let go of the attention that's going towards a conceptual story, and then the attention naturally comes back to the object if we have the intention to let it rest on the breath, for example. And I would propose that this might be a shocking statement, that this type of meditation alone will not lead to liberation from all suffering. It will relieve us of a lot of distracting thoughts about the past and the present and the future. And it's a wonderful, relaxed abiding in the present, but it doesn't cut through the root of birth and death. It doesn't address our fundamental delusion of separation. Even though doing it more and more, it does permeate into our life and help us. So this is in no way to diminish the awesome benefits of this meditation. And one might ask, well, isn't this what the Buddha taught in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra? as the complete path to liberation. And he did teach these, but there's another part that he taught that I didn't mention yet. That's mindfulness of particular understandings, we might say, like directing the attention towards a particular understanding of how things are, and the direct experience of that understanding. And one of these pieces is suffering. Like, what is suffering? We're really putting the attention deeply into investigating what it is. And then the cessation of suffering is another one. So it's in this list of objects of mindfulness, and the object of mindfulness called cessation is not actually an object. I think there's many in the sutra of the Buddha. There's probably like 50 or more objects that are broken down. And I didn't look at this sutra recently, but the one that comes to mind on this list of 50 things, it seems like there's one of the 50 that's not an object. And it's called cessation. And this means cessation of greed, hate, and delusion, cessation of suffering, but cessation of duality, actually. Cessation of the illusion of duality, I would add in there. So, but putting that aside for a minute. So I think if you practice the entire list of 50 items in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, it for sure is a complete path to the complete liberation of all suffering and the unfolding of complete compassion for all beings. But if we skip this particular dharma, it might seem like, oh, it's just a minor thing at the end. I think that's the pivot. I think all the rest is like kind of like warm up in a way to this point. But we could do this warm up for a long time and get really, really settled in the present direct experience of various objects. Because everything on the list is an object, and object means the attention is directed towards something that seems to be outside itself. That seems to be outside itself. That's what we call an object. And that seeming split between the attention and its object, some might say, is actually the root of birth and death, the root of delusion and suffering. That's a big statement. I could check out in our own experience that whether that may or may not be the case. The other two types of meditation. So that we kind of like, yeah, talking a lot, but you might have got a sense for following the breath while talking. And the second one is one that I think is actually maybe not taught in classic Buddhism, including Zen. I don't know about this. We could talk about this, but I would call this mindfulness of the present moment itself. Mindfulness of nowness, mindfulness of the whole field of objects, the whole field of phenomena. So now it's not just tactile sensation of body and breath, but now we're opening the other sense doors, like the ears are now opening to sound. Because usually when we're focusing on the tactile sensation, it's not like we can shut off the ears, but they're kind of like we're not paying attention to the sound traditionally when we're focused on the particular object of the tactile sensation of the body or breath. Now we open the ears and we let in the sound, and also we open the eyes if they're not already open, let in the color and shapes, but in a very direct sensory way. And it's kind of like everything's open. All the senses are totally open. We're not getting into the conceptual thought thing so much. I mean, a thought can come up and we can be aware of the thought popping up for a moment and then just let it go and return to the present direct experience. So in this one, it's harder to get distracted in a way because everything is part of it, right? Every object in our experience is part of this meditation. So if there's a really loud sound, even like a jackhammer, in the distance or the next door, it would be part of, we just like now, the direct experience of the sound of the jackhammer. So the first type, when we're focusing on an object, is actually a lot of things will distract us from it because they pull our attention off the object. This is all objects. And again, I think this is maybe commonly talked about in modern Zen, but looking in the kind of classic texts of either the Buddha or Zen, it's hard to find this one, it seems to me. I would propose also, this in itself, although it relieves a lot of, being caught up in distracted thought and so on, it still doesn't cut through the root of basic delusion because the same problem, or basically like obscuration, maybe. It's not really a problem. It's an obscuration to reality, the sense of the mind and object being separate. And it's still here. It's maybe a little more subtle, but nowness, the field of experience called the present moment, is an object of awareness that we're focusing on, and it's getting distracted from it would be like not nowness anymore. It'd be like conceptual thinking about the past and the future it was what we would call distraction from it. So it's a particular focus on nowness. And I think if we just practice, I have no particular object, I'm just letting go of thought, then where do we land? I think this is where we land, where awareness lands, is on nowness. I'm not trying to focus on anything. I'm just letting go. That is the Zazen practice, letting go of thought. Letting go of thought. Letting go of thought when it comes up. And I think where we land, where if we look now where awareness is, I think that's where it is. It's in the field of experience called nowness. And it's like, we might debate, is like, is this really an object? But it might slip out of being an object at some point. But I think if we're focusing on it as the object of attention, which is very valuable to do, it is. One time I met this Korean Zen teacher, and he was kind of trying to check out my Zazen practice, and he asked, what's your practice of Zazen? And I said, letting go of thought, and maybe we'd say anything other than the present moment, letting go. And he said, and then after you let go, then what? And I said, then usually something else comes up, and some other thought of past and future, and so I let go again. I said, and then what? And then let go again, for countless eons, letting go again and again. And I thought, I had heard about this practice. I thought it was the greatest. With this, I don't even know this teacher's name, to be honest, but this was a great pointing for me. He said, well, if you just keep letting go like that for countless eons, how will this cut through this root of birth and death? How will this cut through basic delusion? It's kind of like you're putting a rock on top of the grass, he said. So it's all kind of like settled down there. You're just in the present moment. You're doing this practice called letting go of thoughts, letting go of thoughts. It's like placing a rock on this grass. And what happens when you take a break from that practice and you take the rock off, the grass just pops back up. It's still alive under the rock for a long time. So how do we cut the root of the grass? And that made sense to me. And I understand how he would say something like that. It shocked me at the time. It disturbed me because I've been practicing this for a long time. But it brought up that deep question. Any practice that we have to like keep doing over and over in order to like rest at ease in the present moment, which is just a temporarily conditioned state called nowness, is conditioned by letting go. So it's not really reliable. As soon as we hold on again, it's we have to let go again. So this second type of meditation, and we might say that this is like, some people might say this is what Dogen means by just sitting. Maybe. I don't know. It's very mysterious what Dogen means by just wholehearted sitting. Some people might say that's this. Personally, if I was pressed on the issue, I'd say, no, actually, I don't think so. If nowness is still the meditation object. So then this third type of meditation is where Zen, I think, Zen picks up on this one. And Zen hardly ever talks about mindfulness of body and breath. In like 1,000 pages, 2,000 or 3,000 pages of Dogen's writing, I think there's one paragraph where he talks about the breath. Interesting, huh? I mean, you think he could have left more. Maybe this was oral instructions. He brought up more about this. And the body he talked about in very unusual ways, too. Just wholeheartedly sit, it may be this, but I would say just wholeheartedly sit, maybe this third type. And this is like awareness that we've been, or attention, or awareness that we've been directing towards particular objects or directing towards this whole field of object. This is the meditation of no object, which is just the awareness itself. And this kind of thing sounds like really tricky, or something like, well, that seems impossible and too subtle or obscure. I don't even know what it's talking about. So, but we talk about this often, like the headless way, or the great perfect mirror. But in this case, see if this works as a guided meditation, a very quick, simple one. The question is, are you aware? And it's not a trick question. And don't get too much into like the word you and who's aware. Just like, is there the experience of awareness right now? Maybe more clear. With our eyes open or closed. And how do you know that you're aware? Any guesses? You can say, throw out any ideas. You probably answered yes to the first question, I imagine, right? Is there awareness right now? It's like the most obvious thing in our experience, actually. Maybe more obvious in a way than the objects. Of course, we're always aware. If we're ever having an experience, we're aware. So then, how do you know that you're aware? I mean, check it out as a question in your experience. Yes?
I just think about what it is, what a machine is, and think that I don't have that blindness. And that's how I know I'm aware.
But so you're comparing to a machine, but that's kind of like bringing in something else. What if you don't bring in anything to compare it to, which is a little bit conceptual? In your direct experience right now, how can you tell you're aware? It's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, anyway, again, no trick question. Yes?
Well, I think for me it's kind of a feeling, and not like an emotion, but like the first thing you were talking about, a tactile sensation.
Tactile.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's an absence of conceptual thought,
uh-huh.
But it feels very vibrant.
Mm-hmm. Would you say even tactile, like bodily?
Yeah, like I feel the air, mm-hmm. I feel the space, I feel the energy.
So these are kind of some different things, because I would say tactile,
uh-huh.
Is like, how do I know I'm aware? I'm aware of the feeling in my stomach. So that's how we've been talking about it. That is a way we can know we're aware, is we're aware of an object. But maybe even asking more basic than that. Like, I know I'm aware because there's objects, but even more basic in our direct experience, how do we, that's awareness of the object, right?
So would you say space is an object?
No, I wouldn't say
space. Oh, because I...
Well, what is that, would you say?
Awareness of space.
Awareness of space.
Like actually feeling, having a sense of space.
Uh-huh, a sense of space, which is like...
Spaciousness.
Yeah, could be, that would be a sense of spaciousness, could be. Any other... It's a knowing quality. Yeah, I think that's a nice combination. This awareness feels like it's spacious because it actually has no edges, right? It doesn't seem to have, the awareness itself doesn't seem to stop at any point, right? It extends. And it has a knowing quality that, which is how it knows objects. But even when we're not thinking, when we're not kind of like asking about the object, but we're asking about the awareness itself, it's like a knowing space. Did Edie have another piece? Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking more of, actually I was thinking about edges, falling continuously, falling off another edge, another edge, into a sense of space or a gap.
Mm-hmm.
To me it's a gap.
A gap. Awareness is a gap between, what would you say, between?
Yes, that's it.
A between. Yeah, I think we could, in a way. That's what came to mind for me. Is it's a gap between objects of experience. In between thoughts, we might even say, there's a gap for, and another way to look at this previous question, is the question of how do you know you're aware? The question is, are you aware? That first question, is there the experience of awareness right now? When you first hear that question and look for the answer, and then the answer yes comes, I think in the gap between asking the question and the yes, that's awareness. The yes a little bit limits it. Yes, I'm aware, I got the answer now. But just when you look, it's very obvious in a way that, of course, but just before the kind of limitation in a way of course or yes comes, there's a kind of just direct experience of awareness. So it's knowing, it's like the edges are falling away and it's spacious totally. And some other qualities seem to be that, like, it doesn't seem to, like, come and go, right? It doesn't seem... The objects are constantly changing, including our feelings, our tactile sensations, the colors, the sounds, the thoughts, the emotions are all coming and going in this space that we call awareness. That is very hard to... If we try to pinpoint what is this awareness... We can't, because it's the one thing that's not an object of awareness. Yes?
Is it different than awake?
Awake. Yeah, it's a kind of awakeness. I always could say awakeness. Even, it doesn't even change when we're really sleepy. And this is very, maybe quite hard to see this, because it feels like the awareness is kind of like, kind of shut down, or like there's a gray screen in front of it. But if we, it's hard to do this, but if we could kind of really attend to the awareness behind the sleepiness, it's exactly the same as when we're totally alert. These are things we can check out. It's, it doesn't seem to have any edges. It doesn't it can direct itself towards objects, but it is not an object. It's a knowing, like luminosity in a way. Sometimes is a word for this knowing, awake quality. Like it's bright and clear, even if we're totally sleepy. It doesn't come and go, and we've never had an experience without it. And we've never had an experience without it. You might say, what about sleep? we don't experience that. If there is some bit of awareness in sleep, then awareness is there. Right? We might even say, at death, does this, what happens to this awareness? We can't say for sure, but the more familiar, in my own experience, it seems like the more familiar I explore this awareness, the more familiar it seems, the less it seems like it could ever disappear. I mean, is that, maybe that's just an illusion, but even in death, there's something that never changes, it seems like. We can put aside death, because we need the speculation, right? But the sense of this space, the more we get familiar with it, the more amazing it is, for one thing. The more the miracle of being alive strikes home. But also, one of the essential qualities of it that hasn't been mentioned yet is that this awareness never suffers. Which is like, it might not dawn on us if we're just paying attention to awareness, but check it out right now. I might be suffering, right? You might be suffering in physical pain, or mental, emotional pain, but can you look at the awareness of the pain, which is always here? It's not something special to find buried in the deep recesses of our subconscious. It's the ever-present, plain old awareness right now. It's a little tricky because there's the awareness of the suffering, and so then we might associate the awareness with the suffering. So I think this is one thing to check out for yourself. Maybe don't take my word for it. Check out in meditation if you can tap into this awareness. And another way you can ask, how do I know if I'm aware? The answer I've heard one teacher give about this that I thought was really great was, awareness knows. Without comparing it to a machine or anything else. How do I know I'm aware? Awareness actually knows. Doesn't it? Yes. Yes, I think so. And I think this is why, actually. I think so. First, one quality is it itself doesn't suffer. And we can check out, especially when we're in pain or suffering, to try to look for this, which is usually not what we do, right? But try to look at this and see, is there one who's not suffering when I am suffering? Or when there's physical pain? Even take the self out of it. Take the personal self out. Maybe there's not even a self, but there's a pain. But like, how about this awareness? And then the compassion part, I think, is now investigating. Again, it's so tempting to go to all the stories, the dharmic stories, the spiritual stories about this, and start applying them. But really staying with the direct experience. Look now. And we're really kind of resting as awareness. You could say awareness of awareness, but there's not two things. Awareness is just being awareness. Now it's now directed back towards the object, any object. So take the tactile sensation in the body. Now we're back to like the first meditation, but now we can maybe shift back and forth between focusing on the object and focusing on the awareness that's aware of the object. And now, from the perspective of that awareness, when you're really resting as that awareness, is the tactile sensation actually separate from the awareness in your direct experience? Without any ideas you heard about this? What would it mean for it to be separate, right? What would it mean for the tactile sensation to be separate from awareness? It seems like it's almost like part of awareness to me. It seems like it's like a modulation of awareness, or almost like a manifestation of the awareness taking the form of a tactile sensation, which is different than it being an object now, right? Now it's like awareness itself is kind of taking the shape or form of a tactile sensation. Now you could... Yes?
Awareness...
Maybe we could use attention and awakeness and awareness, but attention is usually we're paying attention to something. But if we say the attention itself with no object, that's why I think awareness is nice, because there's attention seems to, I usually use it for like paying attention to something. Same with awareness, but awareness, there can just be awareness without.
Is awareness directing the attention? What's directing the attention?
Then we get into kind of like some Abhidharma, like intention. The mental factor called intention directs the awareness, things like this. But just awareness itself. And we can also now move to a visual object. So you can try this at home, right? With the tactile sensation, explore. Does it seem, where's the boundary between awareness and the tactile sensation? If I am this boundless space called awareness, is this tactile sensation separate from me as the awareness? Doesn't seem to be. You can't find any split. Now you can do it with like a visual object. You can like now rest back into the awareness. It's also called turning the light around, shining back at the awareness is shining on itself. We're being the awareness. Being that awareness, we look at an object, a visual object. And same question. In our direct experience, apart from everything we've heard, how can we prove, maybe we'll not even say, that this object is something separate from the awareness? If so, where's the separation? Yeah? It's like, it's a manifestation of the awareness that we call an object, and we usually relate to it, all objects, we usually relate to as external to the awareness. That's how our wiring is set up, right? As human brain, even, I would say. It's how a sentient being operates, is to believe that the appearances of awareness are like external to itself. But resting as the awareness, we can explore this. And again, don't take my word for it. See in your direct experience, could it be that what we think of as tactile sensations, visual objects, sounds, smells, thoughts, emotions, everything now that is experienced from the point of view of the host that we call this awareness, are they separate from it? And we might say, they must be. They must be. Otherwise, there's not a world. But again, this is what we've been told. But look in our direct experience. There doesn't seem to be anything that at least would prove in any way, shape, or form that these objective experiences are separate or something other than this awareness, which is like space. It's a knowing space with no edges. If it had objects, then it would meet at the edge of that object. That would be another way to look at it. But there's no edges to this, right? So this is where I think this is what a lot of the Zen teachings are pointing to. And they say it in all kinds of fancy Zen ways, like, what was your original face before your parents were born? Who is the one carrying this corpse around all day? Turn the light around and shine back. This is the host within the host. You are not it, but it actually is you. It manifests as you. Infinite Zen sayings, I think, are all pointing to this, my understanding. And this cuts through the root of duality, birth and death as separate objects from this awareness that could actually, anything that could taint this awareness, because nothing is separate from it, right? And then to get familiar with that, then we bring that. These are the three types of zazen. and I like to do even all three of them in order. They're all great. And consciously shifting between them. And one last point I think is, it's nice to be clear which one we're doing. And not just mix it. I'll just sit here and see what happens. You could do that, but usually what will happen is distraction and thinking. So it's an intention. And we can shift consciously between them. And then we can bring that Zazen awareness into like complex situations of daily life. And this is where the compassion part comes in. Because compassion is the natural state, I would say, of this awareness. And it's only blocked by thinking that there's people and beings separate from the awareness. That's what I think duality and separation means. There's something outside this awareness, therefore it's separate from me, because we have this sense in a way that I'm this awareness. And that separation can never be bridged, I don't think, until we realize that it's not there. The separation is not there. So very, very simple meditation, but very counterintuitive, because we're totally object-directed beings. Even in meditation, we like directing attention to the object. And so it's simple, it's just unusual because we're not used to doing it, but it's totally accessible. And also, I would almost say, if we get used to it, it's even more accessible in daily life outside of sitting on the cushion, because at any moment, it's just a shift, a slight shift back to like, we're engaged in some difficult situation, turn the light and like, who is actually aware of the situation? And then the situation is like a reflection on the surface of this mirror we call awareness. It's a movie on the screen that never changes. It's the one who's not busy even when we're busy. So, that's a talk about Zazen. And it's kind of late, so maybe if we want to engage more discussion about this, we could do at tea. Thanks for your attention. And this awareness that we all share. One mind, we could even say. We can't experientially, it doesn't seem like we can find a separation between my awareness and your awareness. That's even more awesome. May all beings everywhere caught in the trance of objective greed, hate, and delusion open to the immediate presence of this very awareness, free from hope and fear. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. And Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.